Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it? When you
hour two of the program, we spent a lot of time talking about the NBA, threw in a little bit of NFL in the first hour. If I have time, I'm going to get to that match play thing yesterday. Never thought I would say this, but poor Tom Brady. Right now, though, I'd like to talk a little bit about baseball. And to do that, I get to talk to one of my favorite people when it comes to talking baseball. And that is Evan Altman. Man, how can I describe this guy? Other than tell you that the Cubs Insider, he is the guy. Check it out, CubsInsider.com. And I want to get into his Twitter feed, which is D. Evan Altman. He joins me now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford has 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from. Go to AlpamonteFord.com. He is a father. He is a husband. He is the editor-in-chief of Cubs Insider. He is Evan Altman. What's up, man?
How's it going?
Well, it's going good for me. Can we talk about how it's going for you on Twitter right now? Because I looked up and I was scrolling through and I was like, Evan kind of mentioned that maybe Tom Ricketts should sell the team. And I was like, oh, there's a grenade. So let's talk to him about the grenade that he threw. All right. So I understood the context with which you were saying it. But what's got you miffed about the way that ownership and the amount of money that they're making or not making is being portrayed?
Yeah, I think that's, and I appreciate you saying that. I think the problem sometimes with Twitter, and I think sometimes, you know, we get out there and I think, oh, okay, people read what I tweet or what I write, and so they have appropriate context for what I'm saying. When in fact, that's not always the case. And so, you know, this was based on, I quote, tweeted an article from the Tribune from Paul Sullivan that the Cubs might have to sell players off. Now, his piece was maybe a bit of doom porn, if you will, in that regard. I said, but if it got to that point where they would have to sell off, quote unquote, players in order to kind of scrape by because they had a lack of liquidity, well, if that's the point, you probably shouldn't. And that's not just the Cubs. It was an article about the Cubs. That's any owner. If you can't pay your players, you probably shouldn't be owning a professional sports team. And this kind of goes to the overall tenor of what we're seeing in Major League Baseball, which is the owners coming out and after, you know, multiple years of record-setting profits saying, oops, gosh, we're going to lose a lot of money. We're over-leveraged. We can't pay you guys. You need to take cuts because there won't be fans. Even though fan attendance has been decreasing over the last several years and making up a smaller portion of revenues, and yet revenues continue to set record highs every single year because of the other revenue streams these owners have. So I take issue with kind of where the league is coming in general with this matter. And I think that string of tweets was sort of an outcropping of that, more directly related to the Cubs in general.
I agree with you, and I'm glad that you use the term over leverage, because I think that that's one of the issues here. The ownership, and if you look at some owners around the league, that they are the responsibility crew. Like, they are the personal responsibility crew, and it seems like a lot of these owners have over leveraged themselves to a point, and now they're saying, well, we don't have any of the money. Well, why didn't you save your money like you tell other people to try and do? Instead of not having the liquid assets, all of your money is out in these places where it can be detrimental.
Yeah, and I mean, I made the analogy that, well, okay, say I buy a house, you know, maybe I stretch a little bit and it's got a pretty good size mortgage, but then I go bigger and I add on to the house and I build on and I renovate inside the house. It's a super nice house. It's great. But if I can't pay my utilities and I can't pay my property taxes on the house, should I have really put all that money into it? Or, you know, maybe I should have slowed down. I think the other thing that's a little bit interesting where the Cubs are sort of separated from the pack, at least to the extent that we know, is that the financials Major League Baseball presented to the players had an average of about 39% of income from game day activities, right? And that's not just the gate, but that's everything that goes along with it. Whereas Tom Ricketts told a group of season ticket holders in a video chat a few days prior to those financials coming out that the Cubs are actually at 70%. And I find that really, really hard to believe, just in general. However, it might make a little more sense when you think that the marquee network cost them money. They didn't just sign an agreement with somebody where a network's paying them, you know, $1 billion. They had to front a lot of those startup costs. And so I think the timing of marquee is particularly detrimental to the Cubs because, again, they had counted on a lot more of this kind of as a run-up, and they're not able to sort of get that going. Plus, you've got the myriad developments they've got around the ballpark, which, even though the Hickory Street things, which are owned by the Ricketts family but not Cubs, I think there is still some interplay, probably more so in there than what they've let on at some point. And again, if you can't fill a hotel and can't get people in bars, that's going to be incredibly detrimental to the money that you're making or not making right now. So there's a lot going on, and the owners are not going to be transparent with it, nor do they have to be. It's a private enterprise, but you can understand how the players would be, you know, if I'm skeptical of it and I'm a little bit upset about it, it doesn't have any bearing on my financial well-being. But the players, again, have all the more reason to be skeptical at best of what the owners are telling them.
Evan, it's so interesting to me, and I go back to when and since then the Cubs have said, look, we that was a joke when you're saying that they were $500 million over budget when it came to the renovations. And the idea that the two piles of money don't mix. I was just talking with Zach Harper about this, where the owner of the Houston Rockets, because his businesses are restaurants and oil, the two sectors that have been hit really hard right now, there's clearly even if it's just in his mind, a mixing of the money and what he wants to spend on his basketball team or the money that he's losing with his basketball team not being on the floor, it makes it difficult for me to believe that for the Ricketts that the money isn't mixed, that they aren't connected when it comes to the salaries of players or the situation with Marquee.
Well, and I think, you know, initially they were very clear that there wasn't, that those were two separate buckets. The development company again, Hickory Street Capital is the one again responsible supposedly, right, for Hotel Zachary and the other assorted businesses, the rooftops and what have you. But we have heard on the record from Crane Kenny that there is more of that money generated from those Hickory Street investments can and will go into payroll. And I think Marquee is naturally one of them. I mean, they've said, and we've heard varying things. Again, I think the projections there, certainly based on the carriage arrangements they've gotten or haven't gotten in the case of Comcast Xfinity, have been really detrimental to what they want to be able to do as a club. Because when you're talking about maybe not having Comcast could possibly be, prior to all the COVID shutdown, of course, could have been a forfeiture of $100 million or so in revenue, and that's really just in the Chicago market because of the size of the subscriber base. And so there's a lot that was going on even before the shutdown occurred, I think, that had made them maybe scale back their financial projections. And so, you know, this certainly ups the ante there. Although once things get started back up again, that flow should be there to whatever extent, you know, again, people are allowed to start going back to bars and restaurants and things. But, you know, by 2021, they should be right back on track. It's just kind of it's a really sticky situation. It's very difficult to navigate because, you know, certainly we're doing this all based primarily on speculation at this point.
What are you hearing on a contract getting done between Marquee and Comcast?
You know, I have not heard anything else. I know, again, in that same video presentation, Crane Kenny mentioned that, you know, they were very confident they would get something done before the start of the season. But I think when you look at it, you know, Comcast had all the leverage in the world early on because, you know, they were looking around and saying, well, you know, I mean, there's a couple others that don't have it yet. And they kind of looked, I think, at what Dish did. And after initial losses, and for those who maybe aren't aware, Dish Network essentially did away with all their sports, their dedicated sports programming, regional sports networks. And after kind of an initial shock lapse of losing a bunch of subscribers, they've actually become more profitable because they're not paying out those high carriage fees and having to try to recoup them on the back end. And so I think Comcast is looking at that saying, nah, you know, we're going to wait out for a good deal. And now there's no reason at all for them to really negotiate anything other than a very provider-friendly deal. They certainly don't need to pay much money for Marquee if there's nothing going to be on there. Now, I think once baseball returns, we might be able to see something happen. But I don't really think there's been much of anything going on over the last several weeks, at the very least, other than maybe – you know, just some talks, minor talks back and forth, but nothing of any substance that I'm aware of.
Yeah, it's part of the reason that it made no sense for Comcast to strike a deal for the preseason because they would theoretically lose money on those games versus regular season games. It's going to be interesting to see like what it looks like once we get to a restart. Talking with the editor-in-chief of Cubs Insider, Evan Altman, here on The Score, what makes the most sense to you as far as a season for Major League Baseball?
Oh, gosh. It feels like such a moving target. But, you know, it seems as though this is kind of, I don't want to say it's predestined by any stretch, but I think both sides really, really want that early July start. If they could... you know, under other circumstances, a given date might seem kind of arbitrary, but certainly as we're here on Memorial Day and the weekend that just passed and thinking about how little we actually had in the sports world, you know, that July 4th would be even more so. If there's not anything going on by then, it feels like they've sort of missed a really big opportunity by that point. So I think they want to have something done, both sides. Early June, so they can tell everybody, hey, come on back. Let's get back to the facilities. Let's start up some kind of spring training so we can get you guys ramped up over a few weeks. That still feels to me like something they want to get done, although I'm still, and I'm probably trying to convince myself of this just as much as both sides are themselves, of just saying, yeah, totally. I mean, everything's cool and back to normal, kind of. So, yeah. Open it back up, you know, like it'll be fine by June 10th. And who knows, maybe some places will be, and maybe they can isolate well enough and create their own little, you know, spheres or biodomes and kind of push on with it. But I think you are really running the risk. If they can't get started back up again by July and can't really get in half of a season, then and really, let's be honest, what they need – And this is certainly from the ownership perspective more than anything. And I think you were talking about this, about the NBA as well, is they need the playoffs. The regular season is kind of like that's almost just setting the stage. You need to have a long enough one to make the playoffs feel at least valid. But the real money is there in the playoff broadcast rights. And if they can make that happen, especially if they'll be expanded this year in whatever form they make that happen, that's what they need to go for. And they can't push that too late. Because of, you know, potential weather, because of maybe a second wave, and you don't want to compete too much with the NFL if it's in full swing. You know, you don't want to push past Thanksgiving. So I think that July is really what they need. But I'm still, I guess, ask me tomorrow and I might have a different answer. I'm still unsure of whether that's a reality or not.
Yeah, I think that's where all of us are kind of stuck. Do you think that the players believe that the owners are going to negotiate in good faith?
I don't think so. I mean, I think that's what we've seen with, you know, the owners. We're going to do the 50-50 revenue split you know, was kind of the trial balloon made out of lead, you know, that all the players came back and said, no, that's a salary cap. And, you know, there's a report earlier today from Ken Rosenthal and Evan Drellich over at The Athletic, and I kind of put a little spin on that, but you know, the owners are supposed to provide a different proposal tomorrow, but that it might still be percentage-based. And if that's the case, it still represents the kind of cap that the players are really wanting to push back on. And so how that all works out is really kind of interesting. And then you get to, well, how do the playoffs work? Because typically the playoff shares that the players get for making the postseason are based on a percentage of the gate. Well, there might not be a gate. There might not be fans at all. And even if there are, there would be in much lower numbers. So how does that get negotiated in there? Is the percentage, have the owners did provide some financial information to the union, but you know, the reports are that it wasn't the full information, and it's enough stuff to churn through that you can't just look through that over a couple of days and figure it all out and have confidence or faith in it. So, you know, I do think the players are a little bit distrustful, as they probably should be, but it's going to take, I think, a little bit of faith on their part in whatever arrangement they come to. If it's anything other than straight up prorated salaries, it's going to require a leap of faith on the part of the players to say, hey, we trust the owners to come through, not just on this, but then that they won't kind of hose the players in arbitration and in free agency this coming winter and maybe even in years beyond, which, again, is a really, really tough thing for them to accept after what we've seen the last few winters.
Evan Altman of Cubs Insider joining me here on The Score. I've been talking with people that cover all different sports about the relationship between players, owners, and the commissioner. How would you describe the MLB players' relationship with their commissioner?
You know, I think it sums up, if you look at one item that's a microcosm of it, and I think this would be how kind of fans and players alike view them, it's when Commissioner Manfred talked about the trophy, which is called the Commissioner's Trophy, but the World Series trophy being a piece of metal. And for him to have the just the lack of self-awareness that goes into that, even if it was just, you know, again, I think giving him the benefit of the doubt, which I'm really loath to do because I don't really care for the job that he's done. Even if we say, you know, okay, I get how you're trying to do this, say it is, but it's clearly much, much bigger than just another piece of metal. It's not just some bauble, you know. It's even the gaudiest BCS trophies that they've had in that crystal weird spiky football thing looks kind of silly, but it means so much more. And I think then you had, you know, John Lester, and I think it was on perhaps these airwaves in an interview that he did, I can't recall for certain, but he took umbrage with that, and he should have. I mean, for a guy who's won a couple of those, think about the guys who never did. I mean, that's the ultimate goal, is to hoist that trophy. And so for the commissioner to call it a piece of metal, I think speaks to sort of this lack, or there's some cognitive dissonance there between kind of his relationship to the sport and to the players who play it, and then why those players are playing, because it is for a lot more than just money. Money is at the root of what we're discussing right here, but there's obviously a lot of passion involved. And I think that is very apparent to them, that he is not on that same level that they are in terms of his passion for the game.
Cubs Insider has a great YouTube page where Evan and his crew get to do podcasts and talk with really interesting people. I haven't checked out the Wayne Messmer interview yet on The Rant, but what should I check out? What should I be looking for when I get into that interview?
You know, it was really, really, like, I walked into that one feeling just kind of dead. It had been gray and cloudy for a few days. You know, you kind of get in the funk like that anyway. And I walked out of that interview with Wayne just feeling like I wanted to go run through a wall. He's just such an awesome guy with the great story. And I'm sure a lot of people know this, but I mean, he was shot in the throat in, I think it was 1994. So and the shoes he was wearing during that shooting, he actually wore when he performed the anthem at Wrigley Field for the World Series. So 22 years, he kept those as that reminder. But what I have found really interesting, and this is maybe something, I don't know if everybody feels the same way, but I have tremendous respect for anybody. I'm not an artist of any sort. Like, I can barely write. I can't sing. I can't play any music. I can't draw or paint. But people who can, I find it super interesting to hear them talk about their craft. And to hear him talk about how he rebuilt his own voice, essentially, by himself, without the use of a vocal coach or a therapist, because he knew these vocal exercises from college and was able to do that and come back to do what he's done in the meantime, was just fascinating to me. But just a ton of really cool stuff in general, just about him and kind of the performances that he does other than singing the anthem. I was really taken by that and just loved to listen to him go through that. Just how genuine a person, for the guy who sings, he's known for singing the same song over and over and over, but every time he sings it, you feel like it's just as genuine as it would have been the first time he sang it back in 1984 at Wrigley. So to kind of hear that and how he gets himself psyched up for that every time, I really walked away from it. Like I said, I felt 180 degrees different from what I had coming into the interview. So it was awesome.
Anyone you can promote that you guys are going to have on soon? I saw, yeah, my guy Cole Wright on there too.
Yeah, we did have Cole Wright from Marquee. We're going to have Len Casper tomorrow. I think some folks might be familiar with his work.
I've heard of him.
He's a fairly popular guy. He used to be the play-by-play voice of the Marlins, and then has been with another club for a few years now. Emily Walden of The Athletic, she does a ton of work on minor league coverage and is really established. She's been a vocal advocate for minor league players. So we're going to have her on. That's going to be really fun. And, we got a few other folks. I can't even remember the schedule now at this point. But, we're looking forward to just seeing who else we can get. And that's, you were kind of our first guest that pushed us to kind of go a little bit longer format. So we appreciate that. But as you know, what we've tried to get into with the lack of baseball is just getting to know a lot of these folks on a more personal level than maybe what we'd be able to otherwise if we were just talking about sports. So I think it's something, if you head out there and check out our interviews and what else we've got, you're going to find a new dimension of a lot of folks that maybe you're used to listening to in another capacity.
Yeah, I was just rambling, and that's the problem. But it was a lot of fun. You guys made it a lot of fun, and I'm glad that we got to talk. And if you check out my episode of The Rant, you'll hear me talking a lot about radio and Sonics and all of the geeky stuff that I rarely talk about on the air. I was able to talk about it with Evan and his crew. So I'm very appreciative of that. As always, man, thanks for being fun and informative. I appreciate your time. And subscribe to that Cubs Insider YouTube page. You will not go wrong. There's a lot of great content there. I'll talk to you soon, man. Keep up the great work.
It sounds good. Thanks for having me.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.